Hi, this is Tatum, and I'm going to podcast the rest of our neuromuscular disorder, which is chapter 55. We're going to go through spina bifida, or neural tube defects, and we're also going to talk about muscular dystrophy. If you would like to get out your PowerPoint slides and follow along, that might be most helpful. So neural tube defects is the largest group of congenital anomalies. Normally, the spinal cord and the cauda, which are the spinal nerves and the nerve roots, are encased in a protective sheath of bone and meninges. And recall that our meninges are the protective coverings of our brain and our spinal cord. With neural tube defects, there is a failure of the neural tube to close normally, and this produces varying degrees of defects in the newborn. Incidence is anywhere from 0.3 per 1,000 births, and it occurs more often in white and Hispanic children. There are many different types of neural tube defects. So the first one we'll talk about is anencephaly. Anencephaly is an absence of both the cerebral hemispheres in the brain. And this is a condition that is incompatible with life. Many babies are stillborn at the time of delivery. However, there are a few that can still maintain their own respirations and heart rate, as well as body temperature for just a short while, because part of their brainstem is still intact. And this is very, very hard for families because they basically will watch their child pass away right before their eyes. So this is something that you might see if you ever work in labor and delivery. It's one of those tough concepts to really deal with. But you will see this related to spina bifida. The next one is myelodysplasia, which is a really broad term, but it's any malformation of the spinal cord and canal. There are two categories of spina bifida. There is spina bifida occulta and spina bifida cystica. Spina bifida occulta is not visible to our eye. We cannot see anything at the base of the spinal cord. Most babies are asymptomatic of spina bifida occulta. However, there are times when we can see dimpling or we can see just a tuft of hair at the very base of the spinal cord, and that might alert us to do some more investigating on the baby. Spina bifida cystica is a visible defect, so you will actually see an external sac-like protrusion anywhere between L5 and S1. There are different types of spina bifida cystica. There is a meningocele as well as a myelomeningocele. A meningocele is usually a milder form, and this is actually a sac-like protrusion that encases the meninges as well as the spinal cord fluid, so the spinal fluid. However, there are no spinal nerves within that sac-like protrusion, which is good because there is usually no motor dysfunction or paralysis below the waist with meningocele. So it's a milder form of spina bifida. A myelomeningocele is more severe, and this sac-like protrusion contains the spinal fluid, the meninges, as well as spinal nerves. So since there are spinal nerves involved in this sac-like protrusion, the patient has no bowel or bladder functioning. They don't have any control, specifically motor control, below the waist. There is no cure for a myelomeningocele, and the nerve tissue cannot be replaced or repaired. So this is something lifelong the child will have to deal with. There is paralysis below the waist. If you look at your PowerPoint slide 18, you will see just the different defects of the spine and neural herniations. So that kind of gives you an idea of what we're talking about with a myelomeningocele as well as a meningocele. The next slide actually just shows a baby that has a myelomeningocele. Figure A is a myelomeningocele with an intact sac at the base of the spine. And then figure B is a myelomeningeal cell that is actually ruptured. And we really worry about rupturing of that sac because of infection. So those are some things that you might see if you ever work in NICU, or labor and delivery for that matter. Moving on to slide 20, the pathophysiology of the neural tube defects. So there is failure of the neural tube to actually close during the embryo's early development. A lot of times a neural tube will start to close around 4 weeks. So it actually happens really right after conception. Most, you know, patients don't even know that they're pregnant yet when this neural tube actually closes. There are lots of different causes associated with neural tube defects. Multifactorial causes include drugs, radiation, chemicals, or even maternal malnutrition. It could be due to a genetic mutation, or it could be due to maternal obesity, maternal diabetes mellitus, or even low vitamin B12 levels in the body. As far as detection of these types of defects, a lot of times we will see an elevated alpha-fetoprotein level in the amniotic fluid. So many times they'll do an amniocentesis to check for this. A lot of times they won't do an amniocentesis though until at least 16 to 18 weeks of gestation. But the alpha-fetoprotein is a protein that's produced by the baby. And when we check the amniotic fluid, if there is a small herniation, a lot of times that alpha-fetoprotein is going to be elevated early on. We can detect this through ultrasound as well. And in some cases, they may do a chorionic villus sampling, which is when they take a sample from the placenta, which the placenta, basically the placenta is made up of these chorionic villi. They are small projections of the placenta, and they share the baby's genetic makeup. So they'll actually take a sample of these chorionic villi. However, the risks are higher. Women can miscarriage with this type of this type of detection. And it can lead to skeletal limb depletion as well. They don't like to do this before 10 weeks gestation. And depending on what literature you use, the chorionic villus sampling is not recommended as much. They would rather check the alpha-fetoprotein levels in the amniotic fluid. Once the baby is born, they may do an MRI, an ultrasound, a CT as well to check for these things. Most of the time, if it is a myelomeningeal, you're going to see flaccid paralysis of the lower extremities. So that baby is not going to be able to move those lower extremities like they should. And they may not have deep tendon reflexes intact as well. So those are some kind of red flags to help us look a little bit further. As far as our therapeutic management of neural tube defects, really, it's all about collaboration amongst many healthcare providers. If there is a myelomeningeal seal or a meningeal seal present, they like to try to close this as early as possible, usually within the first 24 to 72 hours. If that sac is leaking, they'll try to do it within the first 24 hours for sure, just because of the risk for infection. A lot of times we'll try to get it done as early as 12 to 18 hours after birth. And our goal is to prevent infection in these babies. The sooner that we can get this closed, the better it will decrease the chances of infection as well as trauma to those exposed tissues. Sometimes as that sac sits there out in the open, that sac can stretch if more and more spinal fluid seeps into that sac-like protrusion, and that can actually stretch some of the nerves within that myelomeningeal cell, and that can impair further motor development. So just the sooner that we can get this closed, the better. Many babies are started on broad spectrum antibiotics to help decrease the chances of infection. As far as orthopedic considerations, our goals are to prevent joint contractures and correct deformities as well. We want to make sure that we're preventing any motor or sensory defects. We know that neural tube defects can kind of go hand in hand with hydrocephalus. And so hydrocephalus is something that we always have to watch for as well. So watch for that increased intracranial pressure. And as that spinal fluid tries to circulate, we know that that sac-like protrusion is kind of an obstruction, and so spinal fluid can actually backflow up into the brain and cause that increased intracranial pressure. So that's why you would see hydrocephalus. Management of GU symptoms is also really important. Because these patients lack bladder and bowel control, we worry about just neurogenic bladders. Neurogenic bladders in these patients are basically problems associated with the nerves that control how the bladder stores and empties urine. These babies are going to be incontinent for the rest of their life, as well as just more susceptible to UTIs from bladder retention. And so it's really important to establish a regular method of emptying the bladder. And a lot of times we'll use clean intermittent catheterization. And they're usually placed on a schedule to help just eliminate any of those risk factors associated with UTIs. So neurogenic bladders are very common amongst babies that have myelomeningocele. These babies also have an increased risk for latex allergies. There's latex hypersensitivity reactions associated with spina bifida. We worry about bowel control as well. Some babies, as they get older, will have some degree of fecal incontinence. However, with regular toileting habits, regular diets or modified diets, as well as the prevention of constipation, we can establish some sort of bowel control in these older children that have spina bifida. It does tend to be a lengthy process though, and it's very time consuming just because we're taking them to the bathroom around the clock, and it requires a lot of diligence on the parents' behalf. As far as the prognosis goes for neural tube defects, it really depends on severity. It really depends on motor function, bladder innervation, just neurological abnormalities. We look at the time that the spina bifida has been repaired if they had to have surgery. So again, the earlier they can repair the defect, the better, just because it helps decrease the chances of infection. And we really have to monitor for hydrocephalus in these babies. So watch for that increased intracranial pressure. And if we can intervene early, generally these babies will have a better prognosis. So moving on to the prevention of neural tube defects on slide 23, all women of childbearing age should be put on a folic acid supplement according to the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. And supplement should be at least 0.4 milligrams per day of folic acid. If a mother has had a history of having a child with a neural tube defect, her supplement should be at least 4 milligrams per day for at least 1 month before a planned pregnancy. Also, diet high in folic acid is recommended. So things like fortified cereals, bread, rice, pasta, green leafy vegetables, as well as citrus fruits are all recommended for these patients. So supplementation is always encouraged to begin before the moment of conception, so we have an adequate supply of folic acid on board, and it does help prevent at least 50% to 70% of all cases. So if they did find this in the prenatal period or during pregnancy, they will schedule a C-section to prevent the rupture of the sac and to help decrease the risk of infection. So they will try to, again, prevent infection by doing a C-section, a planned C-section, if it all works out. As far as taking care of a baby that has a neural tube defect or that sac-like protrusion, we really have to protect that baby from injury. So just positioning interventions, a lot of time we put them prone so we keep them off of that sac. Some doctors may recommend sideline positions for the baby as well. We want to cover that sac-like projection with a sterile moist non-inherent dressing. A lot of times we moisten that dressing with sterile saline, and we always use sterile technique when working with that area of the body. Cleanse around that defect and just observe for any leakage of cerebrospinal fluid that could indicate a rupture of the sac. And if we do see a rupture, obviously that is a medical emergency, and we need to actually let the doctors know right away so they could do surgery right away. And just again, because there is lack of bowel control, a lot of times, you know, these babies, have problems with their anal sphincter. Their anal sphincter can be affected, and they could have a constant leakage of just stool. And so again, it's so important just to keep that area as clean and sterile as we can to help prevent infection. Some of the things to monitor early for signs and symptoms of infection would be just temperature and stability. Make sure you're monitoring that temperature very, very closely. We know babies have a hard time regulating their temperature at first anyway, so it's just something to regulate very, very frequently. Whether it be you're taking it every half hour to an hour, it's really important to just to be watchful of that. These babies can be really irritable. They can be lethargic, and they're going to have signs and symptoms of increased intracranial pressure that would relate to hydrocephalus. So that's something else just to be monitoring for in these babies. So that concludes my lecture on neural tube defects. I am going to stop this, and then I will start a new podcast on muscular dystrophy. Thank you for listening.